Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Good, good, good. Had a very busy day at work. And then here we go. Big Oilers game and a big win, Bruce. This was a big win. 4-3 in overtime against the Winnipeg Jets. A very hard-fought game, tactical game, some breakdowns from both teams. That's what's going to happen when you have some really great offensive players. These are two really good hockey teams. This could be the Western Conference final, Winnipeg and Edmonton. I mean, of course, there's like eight teams that could get there now that the Predators are playing better. Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. What is your good thing?
Well, I'm going to have to go with the penalty kill, David. After ripping them on Sunday for allowing 3 goals in 2 minutes and 38 seconds, tonight it was a tidy 0 goals in 8 minutes and 18 seconds, and only 2 shots that the PK unit allowed in all those power plays. And they came through with a couple of real turning point penalty kills. They killed shortly after taking the 2-1 lead. Connor Brown, who just scored, took a high sticking double minor and for drawing a bead of droplet fake, of blood.
Fake blood, yeah.
Yeah. I think the guy found ketchup in his mustard, in his mustache from his supper.
I haven't seen trickery like that for since Stampede Wrestling.
And I was remembering back to Evander Kane on the bench last week, spitting out blood and spitting mad that there was only a 2-minute penalty called. Anyway, that evened up a little bit later. But they killed off that 4-minuter without a shot. And then the coup de grace, which could have been the coup de grace on an absolutely dreadful road trip. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this later. But the atrocious penalty called on Ryan Nugent-Hopkins with 2:06 to go in a tie game in regulation. This on the heels of a game where they just lost the game in the dying minutes of regulation that was tied on a penalty kill fail. Well, this penalty kill did not fail. And they dug in, they rolled up their sleeves and got down to business. And they played hard, they played physical on the puck, and they were played with some real desperation, the penalty kill, and yet they didn't run around. You know, they just won puck battles, and they cleared it out, and they boxed out. And I thought a fine performance by that group and a huge bounce back game after they were really the Achilles heel of Edmonton in the prior game. And what do we got? Vinny Deharnay, 442. Cody Ceci, 338. T.S. Ekholm, 351. Darnell, Brett Kulak, 313 on the
Nurse penalty. Nurse had a penalty, right?
So Nurse had, yeah, well, that's...
Yeah. That
and he was in the... Tough. I think he was in the penalty box and missed another one of the kills.
Yeah, he had a...
So,
had
in fact,
a
fight, he missed the four-minute. Right? He missed the four-minute kill, didn't he?
Yeah,
because he'd had a fight just
he
before that.
He stood up for Corey Perry.
Corey Perry.
Who that's was right. Getting,
yeah. I didn't mind that. And among the forwards, it was Janmark, 3 minutes. Henrique, who I thought had a really good game tonight, 250. And just right around 2 minutes each for McLeod, Fogle, and Ryan. And so those were the water bearers on the penalty kill for the Oilers tonight. And shout out to them after ripping them last game. It's sew them back together, this one.
They let in just the 2 shots, and only one of them was a grade A shot, but was it ever a fantastic shot.
That's a Scheifele on the cross ice pass?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great save.
I thought we were getting the same old, because on that play, Derek Ryan had been in the corner, and he was like battling hard in the corner, but he, you know, I don't think he should be there. You got to stop that crossing pass, and the Oilers, I think, have been overcommitting when they get over aggressive, that's when they get in trouble. And on that play, that's exactly what happened, because he was the main culprit in allowing that cross ice.
He went too deep in the corner. Yeah.
They shut it right down after that. They didn't allow another grade A shot on the power play, including on that 4-minute power play. So that was an outstanding effort by them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bruce, my good thing is Connor Brown's first meaningful goal of the season. And the game was tied at 1 at that point. Leon Draisaitl on a fantastic passing play. Beautiful stretch pass from Bouchard, setting up McDavid, who put it to Fogle, to put it to Draisaitl. They had tied it up. And then about a minute and a half later, Connor Brown steams into the slot on a rush where CeCe had kicked it all off with a nice stretch pass to Ekholm. Ekholm setting up Brown. Brown went hard into the slot and ripped a hard shot right past the goalie, with Derek Ryan providing a little bit of confusion and distraction in front of the net. It was a fantastic shot. And his other goals, I think they've been up like 3-4 goals when he scored.
Leads in both cases to five goal leads on tap-ins.
So a huge goal. And is this ever great to see? Like, do they ever need to see him score? Otherwise, he can't justify his place in the lineup. He really can't in the playoffs. And it's his third goal in 6 games. He's since scoring.
Breaking out.
He's goal every second game, man. He's like a 40-goal pace here.
Yeah, right. So when you say he ripped it by the goalie, he ripped it by the goalie, Connor Hellebuyck. You know, most years Vezina Trophy candidate. Was a pretty hard guy to beat, and he certainly was tonight. But Brown beat him clean from the slot. Wicked shot. I did not know he could shoot like that.
Yeah, well, he must be able to shoot, because he scored 20 goals a couple times, I guess, in the NHL. Did.
Yeah,
yeah. I think as he's getting stronger in his legs, his shot is getting better. Yeah, he's just incrementally getting a wee bit faster, shooting a bit harder. It's coming along slowly, and finally he's close to his former self as a player. Hey, if he gets there by the playoffs, Bruce, like, maybe this will work out in the end, and we won't all be bitter and having to hear people complain about it endlessly over the summer. Bruce, we're going to reverse order on the bad things. I'll go first because mine comes first. It's now Nuge had obviously a huge goal in the third period, and he helped set up the winning goal, charging the puck up the ice and then going hard to the net, opening up space for Zach Hyman. Just a great offensive play by Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on the winning goal. Mm-hmm. But he had two plays actually early in the game, which were just like head scratchers on the defense. The first comes late in the first period. And I think this is one where he had shot the puck at net, got a really good shot at net, and then watched it. Mm-hmm. And as he was watching it, the other team broke out 3-on-2 mm-hmm. and they got a breakaway. They got a break-in chance by Monahan, I believe it was, late in the first, because he was admiring a shot. And it was just a microsecond too long. It wasn't flagrant or anything. But in the NHL today, you got to be on it, especially against these good teams, because they will punish you for a moment's inattention or for the wrong call in a moment. And that's what happened there. Then on the goal, this was another 3-on-2 rush. And I'm just trying to think what happened on that. What happened on the goal, Bruce? I just finished running the game grades.
It was a counterattack. Both Nuge and Hyman were a little bit late coming back. And it was almost a nothing play. Like, a guy made an outside sort of fairly weak shot that got through CeCe that allowed the outside shot. And then Big Lowry got a piece of it in front, tipped it. And then the rebound popped out to the side. And Appleton, was it, that slammed it in?
Yeah. So what happened on...
neither forward came back all the way to the net, which they needed to do on that particular play.
what happened on this one was it was a 3-on-3 rush, but Nugent Hopkins was just, and again, this was just momentary. He did a little bit of puck watching and mm-hmm. he went to the puck carrier, which is Lowry. Lowry's already covered, or was it Connor? I thought that was Kyle Connor who shot
the
that.
The guy who shot it from outside was, Lowry shot it and Connor tipped it. Was that what it was?
Anyway, I thought it was, I thought it was Connor who first shot assist. It. Anyway, there was a Winnipeg player carrying.
Tipped it myself.
Yeah, Lowry tipped it. Connor shot with the initial shot.
9-foot reach.
Kyle Connor. Anyway, so Nuge is watching the puck carrier, the guy who's shooting it. CeCe's already on him. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. the danger man, Appleton, is sneaking into the play. That's Nuge's man. He's the third guy. He's got to be looking for that guy creeping into the slot, and he's not. He's watching the puck carrier moving towards him. And that's why Appleton is just wide open on the rebound from the tip shot from 9-foot-armed Lowry. That Lowry is a force against the Oilers consistently. Mm-hmm. He's a good hockey player. So that's why, yeah.
So he's a Nugent good defensive player, and he's a huge guy and a face-off guy, and he always seems to chip in. Like his stats don't look like anything, but he always seems to be involved in key goals.
Against the Oilers, at least.
Against the Oilers, at least, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, two pretty major defensive mistakes by Nugent. I agree, that was a nothing play, but it became something because of just a momentary lapse in concentration by one of the forwards, which is not uncommon on 5-alarm shots and goals against in the NHL. I mean, forwards often get it wrong. It's not easy to get it right. Bruce, Your bad thing.
Yeah, it's actually two bad things sort of right in a row. The two Californians that Winnipeg scored in the third. And Edmonton, they'd had a 4-minute power play. Each team got a 4-minute power play in this one. And the Oilers scored on the first one. Nuge finally got off the schneid. I called it a give and go. He dumped the puck into his own defensive corner for McDavid. And then McDavid basically carried it 200 feet up the ice. And Nuge just sort of went into stealth mode and materialized on the far side. And this time no one picked him up. And he was able to slam it home to break a lengthy drought, 13 games since his last. And then at that point, it's 3-1. They're halfway through the third. And I'm thinking, come on, just, you know, one rotation of the four lines, nothing bad happening. And this one's in really good shape. Well, they didn't make it through the four lines without two bad things happening. And the first one was just pressure. The Oilers couldn't get it out. McDavid tipped one that could have gone out if it hadn't just tipped directly to the guy on the point who was able to keep it in. And they passed it around, and the outside shot came kind of a one-timer, but it wasn't even a hard shot. Like, it was a knuckle puck, and the puck was like 2 feet in the air, and it just dropped right down, hit the post on the way in, and Skinner never saw a thing because Big Min was right in the line of fire. So all he saw was a big 73. And not much of that puck, I don't think. So it's not normally what we'd call a grade A shot in terms of where it was taken from. But if the goalie can't see it, that changes the equation.
Yeah.
And then, so it's 3-2 and not for long, because on the very next shift, the puck goes right back into Edmonton's zone. And it's some back and forth. And then finally the Oilers get control. And then Cody Ceci, I think it was, chipped it out of the zone. And it just looked like a safe pass into the neutral zone. The damn thing carried all the way to the icing line for icing. And the guys who were peeling for the bench wound up having to come back out, take the draw, lose the draw, and Jets cycled around, take another outside shot. And this time it is Sean Monahan, who's kind of left alone in the mid-slot, and he deflects the puck right out of midair and into the net. And just like that, it's gone in literally 1 minute, two goals. It's gone from 3-1 to a tie game. And Oilers have blown a 3-1 lead for the second game in a row. Which did not land well in my living room, I have to say. I love Californians when the Oilers score them, but otherwise they tend to not.
They're the most frustrating goals against. Like, they just, they come out of nowhere. There's a good deal of randomness in them.
Yes, absolutely.
There really is. Like, what separates a Californian from a one that doesn't go in the net is luck often. I mean, that was Brendan a hell of a Dillon. Tip shot. That was a hell of a tip shot by
Brendan Dillon scores.
Exactly.
You know, I mean,
yeah. So, and it was just DeHarnay's, like, DeHarnay's punching himself in the head essentially after that one.
When he was on the left side, I noticed he tends to maybe get lost a little bit more when he's on, when he flips and he's on his opposite side. He seems to have his angles pretty good on the strong side.
Uh-huh.
And that one, the D-man kind of got crossed over. And anyway, he was unable to block the shot, but was very able to block the vision of his goalie. Not a good combination.
They had been putting quite a bit of pressure on, I think. They'd already had.
That was a long shift. And it went, seemed like as soon as the penalty ended, it went right into Edmonton's zone, and they just couldn't get it out.
Yeah. And, the second one, that was a hell of a tip, actually. So what can you say? That was a tough one. There's little, Nurse is there, right? But it's tough.
Yeah, a little too far away from the guy to close the gap.
Okay, Bruce, let's move on to our numbers. What is your number?
Yeah, I'm going to go with 200. That is the 200th career goal by Zach Hyman, who finishes a spectacular week, which he scored two goals on Thursday, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, and an overtime game winner on Tuesday to roar past the 50-goal mark and now to the 200 career goal mark in surprisingly rapid fashion, given, you know, he's an nine-year veteran. Eight-and-a-part-year veteran that started the year at 149, and here he is all the way up to 200 and done in quite dramatic fashion. He'd been absolutely robbed by Hellebuyck early in the game on a rebound chance where it looked like he went right around him. I don't know how Book was able to get his pad over and kick that one out. But in overtime, he had a very short shift because Draisaitl came when Nugent Hopkins got the puck and came rushing up the ice. Draisaitl went to the bench and Hyman hopped over the boards and joined the rush that was already sort of gaining the zone. And Nugent Hopkins made a really good play to get him the puck, and Hyman cut into the middle and fired a backhand shot and then pounced on his own rebound and pounded it in for the game winner in overtime.
I'll tell you what, Bruce, if the Oilers win the cup and Zach Hyman has a great playoff and he lasts a few more years here at Edmonton with McDavid, he could be in the Hall of Fame before this is all over. It wouldn't be unheard of that could happen.
Long way from 200 to, I mean, the
you'd have to get to 400.
Yeah, that's not impossible in the present dynamic.
Yeah,
he's in a very good spot.
And a lot have to go right, but a lot
for all the shit that Zach Hyman's been taking in recent days from jealous fans of other teams. One put together a video and claimed that any goal scored from within 5 feet of the net was, wait for it, unethical. And he compared how many unethical goals Hyman had compared to ethical goals. So I don't know if this one tonight counted as ethical or unethical, because the whole reason the puck was close to the net was because of the play Hyman made to get it there. Anyway, there's been some real weird commentary out there.
What blog was that on?
Hyman's 50th goal. It was actually just a tweet on the internet yesterday. There was a video of all 50 goals, and this guy ran a little counter in the corner, ethical, unethical.
Oh, he actually made a video.
If it was a tap-in, it was unethical. Very weird choice of words. So.
What an idiot.
And then another guy today had
all that hard work, though. That's a lot of hard work to put that video together. Like, good
4-minute rant that the guy had on the net, on saying that Hyman had it easy because his dad was rich and he was able to buy a league and give him every chance that he needed, neglecting to mention that when Hyman was a peewee. He was about the 12th best player on his team, and yet somehow he made it to the NHL and made it to the 50 goal mark. I mean, it's a pretty exceptional story, if you ask me. Anyway, there was some very weird commentary out there.
Some people, Bruce, can't help but display their mental illness on the internet, and that's just insanity.
Their cantankerousness,
like,
or whatever.
Well, that's toxic envy. Like, yeah. Just get lost, buddy.
Yeah. Anyway, he took a lot of grief. Even the LA Kings fan lowered the boom. The LA Kings official Twitter feed, which should have no reason to like Zach Hyman, but they just lowered the boom on this guy because they just thought it was, maybe they thought it was unethical.
Was it the unethical guy or the other guy, the envious guy?
Envious guy.
Mr. Envy.
Who got it. I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, like no other NHLers had a rich dad or any kind of advantages, right? Like Matt and Brady Tkachuk that are hanging around NHL dressing rooms from the age of 3, you know, they never had any inside track or, you know, any of the many, many sons of former NHLers that have all kinds of access from early age. You know, it's unfortunate. I mean, this is itself a bit of a conundrum. It's a rich family sport in the sense that you've got to have money to support your kid to play in this sport.
So oh, yeah. Zach
Hyman is not hardly alone, but his dad is, you know, he's a rich dude. But Curtis Hamilton's dad was a rich dude too, owned a team. And Curtis Hamilton didn't score 50 goals in the NHL. In fact, he didn't score any. I mean, Zach Hyman had whatever extra gears it took to keep working on raising his game. And I'll say one thing about Zach Hyman's super ability that he doesn't get much credit for is he is a fantastic complementary player. He's great without the puck. He knows where to go. He creates havoc. He creates lanes. He creates screens, creates rebounds. He pots rebounds, you know, and he's quite happy to let the high skill guys do most of the puck handling, and he's a great support player. And just look at all the wingers McDavid had. What other winger had 50 with McDavid? We can't count Draisaitl, I don't think. So who had 40? Who had 30? 27, Patrick Maroon.
Well, would you count Nuge?
Not really 37. As McDavid's winger for the whole year. I'd have to check and see what their splits were. Check. But anyway.
And I'm not sure that you count Nuge either, Bruce. I don't know.
Yeah. I still think of Nuge and Draisaitl as centers, not wingers. Anyway, he's Chris Kunitz to Sidney Crosby in terms of what he does for his line. He's just an excellent mortar player, you know, in the bricks and mortar arrangement. And sometimes those players don't get all the credit they deserve. And other times, apparently, they get too much credit.
Yeah, him scoring 50 goals really seemed to set people off. I just ignored it all. I don't care what, like, who cares? Like, I don't care what all these people have to say. Like, you know, there's just so many ridiculous opinions out there. So
200 goals. You don't do that because daddy's rich.
Yeah. You know, it's true. Hockey is becoming a rich person's sport, and it takes a lot. And just, it takes a ton. Like, there's tons of people, like, from talking to parents, you ask them why is your kid in hockey? Part of it is the money. And part of it, like, they say, I don't want to get up at 7 a.m. So there's, like, you have to have super committed parents too. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, 5 a.m. for hockey
or
practice.
6 a.m.
It's not unusual. You know it, Bruce. You were there.
I do. 12 years.
Yeah. I had 5 kids in minor hockey and I coached for 10 years. It's not for everybody. But the people in it, love it. And the kids, generally speaking, put up with their fanatical parents and they also have a good time. Anyway, Bruce, my number is Darnell Nurse's stat line, which is kind of unusual. And I'll start with his unofficial stat line compiled by the Cult of Hockey. He, he had six major contributions to grade A shots at even strength, and he made four major mistakes on grade A shots against. So that's a high event, Darnell Nurseyan kind of game, but more good than bad. And that's what you're at his best. That's what you're going to get from Darnell Nurse. More good from bad. Yeah. And that's pretty good for him in that game. He ended up minus one. So 7 minutes in penalties for that fight, and good for him for standing up for Corey Perry. I actually think that's important. Yeah. You know, during the decade of darkness, we remarked on it numerous times how no one stood up for Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins when they got run. And here we have it. Here we have a team that does that. When Corey Perry gets drilled into the bench by Brendan Dillon, Darnell Nurse is there for him. And I do think that makes a huge difference on a team, given the violent, intense nature of hockey, intimidating nature of playing in the NHL.
Well, Perry had been drilled into the corner in no uncertain terms, as in sort of thrown into the glass by huge lumbering Morgan Stanley in the first period. And yeah. Perry fought his own battle there and lost it. Like, that was quite a one-sided fight. And the linesman was standing off to the side watching Stanley rain down blows and going, well, what do we say to Corey? I guess, hell with you, Corey. Take a few more while we watch.
How is that guy's nickname? How is that guy's nickname not Mount Logan Stanley? Corey Perry was just trying to survive that fight, Bruce. I don't think he lost it because he didn't get hit that hard. He was just trying to get as far away from those long arms. Yeah, well, not rope, but yeah, kind of. Yeah, just dodge the punches that were coming, tire out Stanley, and hope that finally the linesman would come to his rescue.
Yeah, well, the second time that, you know, he got taken into the bench by Brendan Dillon, who's another big lumbering sort of crude defenseman that Winnipeg has on the left side. And the hit was okay. And then after Perry sort of got pushed back on the ice, Dillon decided to just give him another little shot just for good measure. And that's what Darnell objected to. And up he came, because Perry, he can't fight for a second time. He's probably too tired anyway. Those fights really wear you out. So,
oh my goodness.
Darnell took that one. And I think that's a good statement to Corey Perry that, you know, you're going to fight a lot of battles for us, but we're going to have your back from, you know, when you really need it. And that was a time where I think it was appropriate to say, you're going to push Corey Perry around, not on my watch, was basically what Nurse was saying there. And
I think in that fight too with Nurse, he was also trying, like, I think both of them were fairly cautious in their fights. Like, they don't want to break their hands on some knucklehead's helmet. So
he knocked Dillon's helmet clean off with the last punch. So I know it must have landed somewhere in the area. I'm not quite sure if he, anyway, it was spirited, but as you say, a little bit cautious, but it was more a question of answering the bell, because Winnipeg played a hard-edged game tonight, and Edmonton had to answer that challenge.
Yeah, so Nurse is continuing with Nurse's stat line. His ice time was just 19:31. And in fact, in a game, the top defenseman was 21:21. So there was fairly even distribution of ice time for the defenseman and the forwards in this game. He tied for the lead, Nurse did, in shots with six at net, with Hyman, who also had six, and Evander Kane, who had six, including his breakaway chance. His breakaway chance set up by Darnell Nurse's fantastic stretch pass.
Yeah.
Darnell Nurse led the Oilers with five hits. This is the game the Oilers need from Darnell Nurse, this high-energy game where he's hitting, shooting, fighting, making passes, and hopefully, you know, limiting the defensive mistakes as much as possible. Although there's always going to be a few because he's playing a fast-paced game against tough competition.
Well, he sure made a big defensive play with maybe 3 or 4 minutes left when there was a seam pass that looked like it was going to find Mark Scheifele with nothing but net to look at. And Darnell was able to just get a little piece of it, the pass coming through, and deflect it, not on his own net, but away from Scheifele and just into the gap. And it was just the slightest little touch, and it may well have been a game saver. That was a very deadly looking play.
He also, he on the 4 minute power play, the play that I remember most was him stopping a cross seam pass at the side of the net. So another big play there. Bruce, let's move on to our conundrum. And tonight's conundrum is the high sticking call against Nugent Hopkins, which was clearly from the replays committed by, was it DeMello that committed it?
Yeah, high sticked his own guy.
Yeah, high sticked his own guy. It's absolutely clear from the replay. Nonetheless, just a little bit more than 2 minutes left in the game, Nuge goes off for 2 minutes. And it's it raises the question of how much video replay do you want? What do you want it for? Mm-hmm. And my inclination is to have as little of it as possible. Just as just, I don't want it on offsides.
I agree.
And I don't, I don't want it on, I'm, I, you know, because it's just, I don't know. And it seems like the owners often benefit. I think the owners more often benefit than they get burnt on the offside thing, because they seem to be quite adept at picking out every time it happens to them.
Unless it's Cale Makar.
Yeah, unless it's Cale Makar. But I don't, I just, I wish that would
going
go away.
Through a wrinkle in the space-time continuum.
I think obviously you need it on goals. It's quite, it can be helpful on goals. Yeah. Other than that, I'd rather than on a penalty like this, I'd rather just have the refs make a mistake and everybody live with it than have video review on it. I'm not in favor of video review. I just think it's tedious and drags out the game. And
They just talked about this at the GM's meetings. And this very scenario came up, high sticking and the other one's puck over glass. And the idea being that the team that's got the penalty called on them can challenge. But if they lose the challenge, then they're going to get a second penalty on top of the first one and have to go 3-on-5. So they're very unlikely to challenge it unless they know they're right. Like Chris Knobloch knew he was right tonight. He was just looking at the ref saying, no, not what happened. And when you look at the replay, there's one obvious thing that stands out, and that is that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has white tape on his stick, and Dylan DeMello has black tape on his stick, and it's the black stick that smashes the Winnipeg guy in the face. And four zebras apparently couldn't tell black from white.
It happens, Bruce.
It sure does.
They're not intentionally getting that wrong. It was a mistake. Yeah.
Anyway, but even when they got together and talked to each other, they couldn't. Anyway. If the Jets had scored there and won the game on a late power play goal, I would have been a very surly customer during this podcast tonight.
I used to watch the NBA a lot. I was a huge fan, and I haven't been in recent years, but I tuned into a playoff game this year just to see I can't remember which team has this great center, I think Denver, and I wanted to see him play. And I was just struck by how many video reviews they were. And it was just horrible. It was wrecking things. I like that whole thing though, of maybe it should always be this. You can call a video review, but if you get it wrong, you get another penalty.
2 minutes short. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the penalty for an incorrect challenge now. But if you're challenging a penalty and you get it wrong, then the penalty for that is another penalty. And now you're 2 men short for 2 minutes, right? It's not just two men short.
Are they going to do that on high sticking?
Well, that's what they said. They're talking about it. Now, it still has to go through a couple of layers. But that was it was a hot topic at the GM's meeting last week? They were talking about this, so
I know you want to get it right and you want to be fair, but I just think at some point it becomes even though it's very serious, like people's livelihoods, and they're all very competitive people, and the fans want it to get it right. It's like, are we not all just taking it too seriously with this endless video reviews? It's just play the damn game.
Well, ever since video got better and better, and technology has taken over. And it's like, the NHL is like, well, we have to do something with technology. What can we review? Well, we can review offsides, and we can cut it paper thin, but that's one thing we can call, but we can't overrule a referee's decision, no matter how egregious a penalty call might be. No, we can't look at that. And to me, it's like, let's have a society where we you know, random crime continues to go on as random crime, but we crack down on every single citizen that goes 1 kilometer an hour over the speed limit because we can measure that.
Yeah, so I'm not gonna.
You get a big fine. I'm gonna get you into the speed trap.
Don't get me going on this, Bruce.
But yeah, 1 kilometer. I'm talking about a fine for 1K over the speed limit. Like that's what it seems like. It's like such a slice. Such a thin slice that they
because you can measure it and because it's, you know, you can easily prove it in court. That's what you take to court because you can't prove someone, for instance, you know, changing lanes too much or dangerous driving. That's really difficult to change.
Right.
And that's really hard to prove, but you can sure show if someone's gone minutely over the buffer zone anyway. Such is life in Edmonton, Bruce, and such is life
in the NHL. At least they killed the penalty. And then they won. Even if they lost in overtime, like, would they come up with 0 points because the ref screwed up
a white tape
for black tape? Nugent's stick is literally on the puck on the ice when DeMello's stick comes smashing up into his teammate's face. Like, wasn't even close. Anyway.
Take the two points
and get out of Dodge.
Yeah, well, Nugent got his revenge when he set up that winning goal. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Karma. Bruce,
yes.
What's the next game?
Next game is Thursday at home. They're back home. I think it's the Kings, isn't it, next? I believe so. And then they have a Saturday afternoon game.
Yeah, against the Ducks. Yeah, there's a break. Yeah.
So not really, but the Kings Thursday night, that's a huge game because the Kings are coming on strong.
Yeah.
Then Saturday afternoon, then Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday next week. So it just keeps going higher.
Full steam ahead. We're getting there. Thanks for talking tonight, Bruce.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.